But my little guy is 3. So in 10 years, or 15 years, or 20 years, is there going to be another mom who sees my boy coming down the path or sees my son on the sidewalk and crosses the street because she's afraid? She is afraid of my boy. And the only reason she is afraid is because he's male. And that just kind of was like, something's wrong with this. How can this be that this is a natural reaction in our society and solely based on gender?
Welcome to Imperfect Momming. Our children are constantly looking to us for examples. The term role model doesn't quite cut it here. We are shaping their worldview with every move we make. You see, it's not in the lectures we give or moments where we are actively attempting to teach them. It's in the micro movements we make, the unconscious ways in which we navigate life. We are constantly teaching our children how to show up for themselves, their friends, their future partners, and even their future children. So what can we do to ensure we are raising thoughtful, compassionate, self-aware human beings? We have to become them ourselves. No one is perfect, but we can still all be better, and it starts with self-healing. Let's get to it. Welcome back to Imperfect Momming, and we have a very special guest today, Catherine. Welcome to Imperfect Momming.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I'm Catherine Imabayashi. I am a Canadian who has relocated to Japan. I've been an educator for 45 years. I've just recently retired in the last 3 years. I spent most of my career in Japan and Canada, and then for a short while, we went to different stints in Thailand, Qatar, Georgia, and then we returned to different spots in Japan. What I do right now, 3 years ago, I retired, and I needed to make a choice of what I wanted to do for this next third act, and I had a few ideas, but I hadn't decided before the end. And I ended up really following a passion that I've had for almost 30 years and have gone full force into starting my own business. And now I am a parent of boys coach. So I guide parents who are raising little boys to understand their sons a little bit better and the world that they're living in, so that they can have better communication and just deeper relationships with them.
Well, as a mom of a boy, I appreciate the work you're doing in the world.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I have sort of a live-in coach. My husband and my son are very, very similar. And so a lot of times when I'm just like, I don't understand what's going on, my husband will be like, yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's the truth of it.
Yeah. So where do you start with, do you work with moms or dads or both?
Both. Usually it's just the mom, but occasionally I've had both parents, and that's been a really lovely experience.
So
mostly I work online because the people who come to me are usually not, if they are living in Japan, then they are expats. So a lot of my clients will come from abroad.
And so where do you start? What brings moms to you?
Well, it's usually because they're not in such a good place. Most of the women who come to me, they're career women. They have tried all the things themselves. They've read all the books. They've listened to the podcasts. They've tried to figure their little guy out. And Something is not, they know something is not working and they don't know what it is and they really want to. So, however it happens, they come into my world a little bit. And by that time, it's kind of like sink or swim. Like they're ready to almost give up because they have tried everything and nothing has worked. Often it's connected with behavior. Often, like that's the biggest thing. My boy won't listen to me. He's, always getting in trouble. He's can't control himself. The very, common problem.
My guess, but I'll let you answer. Yes. What age are the parents, are the children, typically at the point where they're calling you?
There's an awful lot that starts in kindergarten and lower elementary.
Okay.
And then it just goes on from there.
Now, my son was very cooperative, I guess is the word. He just, he listened and he did his thing, and puberty hit, and it's like he's very self-aware, so he recognizes, like he knows that he's hitting puberty, and he frequently says, "I don't like cute puberty because I don't like to be mad at you, or I don't like to not like you," or
Yeah.
and I was like, and I'm just like, I get it.
How
It's
old is he?
he's 12.
I think the challenging thing for boys when they're in that particular phase is that there's no mark for them moving or transitioning into a new phase. When when you a little girl, or not a little girl, but when she is moving from childhood into womanhood, everyone understands it, everyone recognizes it. She has her first menstrual cycle. And so she's part of the women's tribe. With the little boys, there's never a clear cut, okay, now it's time to put away the toys and become more responsible. And so they get kind of lost in the shuffle. There's a lot of, not a lot, but there's more than there was 30 years ago, a bit of a movement towards creating rites of passages for boys so that they have, there are some religions, in the Jewish religion. I can't remember what that's called, where the boy, when he's 13, bar mitzvah.
The bat mitzvah, yeah.
Yeah.
Bar or
Bar
bat, I don't remember the difference between the two, but yeah.
that one, anyway. But there are other places, especially Australia, has really some forward-thinking systems in place to help boys, and usually it's boys with their fathers who participate in these ceremonies so that there is something recognizable. The boy understands that he is moving from one, stage of life into another with those responsibilities and expectations and a group of people around him to support him who understand him. So they're in a tough space. Our little boys, when they're going through that stage, especially, it's difficult for them.
I have heard in a couple of other cultures where, and I don't remember who told me this, but that not only is there a tradition for a boy to become a man, but that the father takes the boy in the middle of the night so the mom can't participate or can't block it from happening because our gentler nature, we want to protect them from these hardships. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I heard it in the autobiography, a celebrity autobiography, and I think that it makes sense because I find myself like telling myself, okay, he's got to do this because this is where we go from boy to man. And one of my coaches talked to me just about the age, you know, that 12 years old is, I want to say biblically, is the age of responsibility. Where from 12 to 13, they're learning, they're becoming, they're transitioning into adulthood. And then in the Jewish religion, they have, they're a man at 13 years old. And we've kind of lost that a lot in our culture, in at least in the American culture. And there's a there's kind of this idea of like failure to launch, which has less to do with the child and so much more to do with the parents not allowing that. Because from the moment they're born, okay, maybe the moment they're two, like they're trying to get their independence.
Yeah,
And how much
yeah.
independence they get depends on the parents.
So what happens is that, like when you're talking about a rites of passage, and there are components to a rites of passage, and one of them is for the young boy to be in some situation of risk and danger and kind of prove himself. Like that's the way it has always been. It's a little bit softer today than, you know, it would have been a long time ago. But what happens when boys don't have that kind of experience is they will, many boys will try to find other ways to acknowledge that they've moved out of boyhood, whatever the risks are. So you get the risky behavior, you get the, you know, doing things that are going to get them in trouble and perhaps be really unsafe, but they keep needing to, they feel the need to prove themselves. Like, oh, I'm not a kid anymore. I'm, you know, I'm moving into manhood. Whereas if they have a ceremony where that is acknowledged, then they're starting at a different step. They don't have to prove anything. They've already done it. So it's something that I think anyone can do it. You don't have to have all the bells and whistles. Like at the time that our son was in that age, I had been reading about it for a couple of years. And we were living in Beirut at the time, and we didn't have extended family, and we'd only been there, you know, I think 2 years when he turned 13. But I created a rites of passage for our son, myself, having the components in it, having him surrounded by men who would be a role model for him, and incorporating like letters and video letters from male family at home. The hardest thing was that, you know, I created it, but I couldn't be there, like, because it's a man's thing. So it was, but it was, and I have no proof whether, you know, that had an impact or not, but I thought it certainly can't hurt for a 13-year-old boy to be surrounded by men who are talking about, you know, their younger years, things they wish they had known, and to just surround him in this warmth and love of men. So that he sees that side and that vulnerability that they're willing to be to help him grow up to be a better man.
I love that. What exactly was it that that excited you about this type of work?
Well, I do believe things all happen for a reason. And I think when you're, you know, on the path that is the right path for you to be on, I think things keep coming to you to, you know, reaffirm that you're on the right path. We were blessed to have, you know, a boy come into our world at a time that wasn't, you know, we never thought we'd have children. And I was an older mom. And I grew up in a heavily female populated family. So to have the responsibility and the privilege of raising a boy, I took very seriously. And even though I had, by the time I had him, I had already been working for a long time in early years in lower elementary. So I thought I had a pretty good idea of what it meant to raise a little one. And I think that's one of the problems is that, you don't know what you don't know until you become aware. So it took a certain experience when he was about three. And when that happened, it just opened a whole door, opened a can of worms. And that was the rabbit hole I started going down. And for the next 28 years, for the next 28 years, I've just kind of immersed myself in trying to understand the inner emotional world of boys and how we can make it better, both for us and for them, and to make the parenting experience just more joyful because it can be.
What would you say is the common denominator, like the common struggle that your clients are dealing with?
Well, the client would probably say behavior, misbehavior. If I go a little bit deeper, I would say that the main common thread through all of it is not being aware of how much unconscious gender bias is impacting, negatively impacting how we are parenting.
Do you want to say elaborate on that a little bit?
So what happened for me was when our little boy was about three or four, on a Saturday, my husband was working. My little guy wanted to go fishing. So we went to a little creek, a little river, not far from home. It was a little off the main road. Didn't think anything about safety because it's Japan, and I wasn't worried. And we were having a beautiful time, lovely day. Little guy has his fishing rod, It was just, we were having a lovely time. And then I looked up the path because I could, I saw somebody coming down. And it was a group of five or six boys. And when I saw them, there was something that happened that was so instinctive and so guttural. And it was total fear. And it was like, what am I going to do? There's a gang of boys coming down here. How am I going to protect my little boy? And how am I going to protect myself? And when the boys came down, it was obvious they were just moved. They were in that transition summer between the end of elementary and before middle school. And so most of them had their, a really big growth spurt, all arms and all legs. So their bodies were bigger. But I know that age group. At that time, I was working with that age group. And so, of all people, I should have realized that, there were no threat to us at all. And in fact, we had such a lovely time together. But it was when I got home that night, I couldn't let it go. I couldn't let it rest. It was really, really bothering me that I'd had this reaction to these really lovely young boys. And the more I thought about it, trying to make sense out of it, and I couldn't. I could not figure out why I reacted that way. And then there was a thought that came, and it was like, okay, but my little guy is three. So in 10 years or 15 years, for 20 years, is there going to be another mom who sees my boy coming down the path or sees my son on the sidewalk and crosses the street because she's afraid? She is afraid of my boy. And the only reason she is afraid is because he's male. And that just kind of was like, something's wrong with this. How can this be that this is a natural reaction in our society and solely based on gender? And so that's what started it. I wanted to understand where that comes from. And that's where the whole thing behind our unconscious gender bias. I thought I didn't have that. I thought I've worked with children. I'm a strong, independent woman. I really believed I did not have gender bias. And had that incident not happened, you know, I never would. There's been quite a few studies that have been done like that. BBC did a really good one on, I forget, the toy experiment or something like that. And they dressed toddlers in the opposite stereotypical clothing of what their gender was. So the little girls kind of looked like little boys kind of looked like little girls. And then they had some people come in one by one to play with them. And there was toys all around. And it was very interesting, you know, the stereotypical things were chosen and it went on like that. And what was most interesting in all studies like this, the most interesting is the same reaction I had. Those people, when they were told what had happened and realized that their behavior towards that child was based on the gender, they were shocked.
Yeah.
They really didn't think that they would react that way.
Yeah. I definitely recognize my gender bias when it comes to, like, I would do the same thing with a group of men, like,
mm-hmm.
and me by myself.
Yeah.
I'll cross the street every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's enough stories out there to make that a safe practice. But it's kind of like, but what does that do to that little boy?
Mm-hmm.
What does that do to that 12-year-old that's walked down the path if he knows that I was scared? Like, what's that do for his self-esteem?
Is there a piece of advice that you want to share with moms?
One of the easiest ways to try to check yourself, like to get on that path of being more aware, is just when you react to something, if you just pause for a second and think, would I react the same way if this was my daughter instead of my son? And sometimes that really helps you think, okay, that I am reacting because he's a boy. And it just helps you get started on that, you know, being more aware.
Yeah. Is the gender bias a really big factor inside the behavioral problems that, and I'll use their air quotes for problems, you know, that parents are facing?
One of the biggest things that I have benefited from in all of this, and that it has helped not just my relationship with, you know, like little boys in the classroom, my own son, but also the adult males, is that, and I'm not sure if it was because I grew up during the, you know, the women's movement or whatever it was, but I had it in my mind that it didn't make any difference. Men thought the same way I did. So my expectations were, you know, even just something for communication. If I was having if there was a problem with my partner, I wanted to talk about it immediately. There was no waiting for another time. It was like, it's now or never. And that is not, that actually, it's not very respectful for how the male would prefer to communicate. So learning about some of the differences and being able to apply those to practical life makes a difference in our male's level of frustration with us. So if you look at a little boy who if you can communicate in a way that is a natural way for him, being aware of some of the differences, then he's not going to feel the frustration because he can't quite get it right. He's not going to need to try to change who he is and how he feels so that he can make sure that he fits in and that he receives all of the love and support and the community that he needs to. So yeah, it's a really big factor.
Yeah. It's one thing that I've learned in my relationship with my husband is when I know I'm irritated, that's not the time to have the conversations. What I have yet to learn with my son is when he's irritated, that's not the time to have the conversation.
That's exactly that. And that's a really big one. And we can save ourselves a lot of pain and our boys too. If there's something that it's referred to as timed silence, and it's that period of time after there's been some kind of, you know, an explosive experience or something that's been emotional for our boys. Like something has happened. There's been a problem. There's been a bit of a blow up about something. Our tendency as women is to, we got to sit down and talk about this right now. Tell me what happened. Tell me how you're feeling. How are we going to fix this? Like that's usually how we react to it. It seems this concept of timed silence is that especially anything that has been embarrassing or shameful, especially, the boys need some time. And they need that time to just be able to pull themselves back in, get a little bit of, you know, self-regulation going before they can communicate about it. And if we give them that time and are aware when it's it seems like the door is open for communication, then we can start off and have really constructive dialogue between us. But if we try to jump in beforehand, either usually the boy will either shut down or break down. It'll be one or the other, because it's not, that is not how they best communicate.
Yeah. Is there a book that's been instrumental in your personal development journey?
Yeah. The first book that I got, which I ended up over the years, I've had three different copies of it. I've had my son read sections of it. I had my own school for a little while. I would lend it out to parents, you know, and it was Dr. William Pollock, Real Boys. And he is the person that I learned about the boy code and what that meant, what it stands for. I got a glimpse at the emotional world of boys. And at the end of his book, he said, and if you've gotten something out of it, then now your job is to share this with others. So I have taken that on as a, you know, a mission following his words. But his book was definitely the most powerful one that I initially came across. He has, it's Real Boys, and then he has Real Boy Voices, which is all the interviews that he did with teens and young men. In his research, he was working out of Harvard, and hearing the real voices of these young men and boys was another eye opener. And he had a third book that was a workbook specifically targeted toward fathers. So that didn't help me so much because my husband, English is not his first language, but there were some really wonderful things in there to help conversations anyway. So yes, it was Dr. William Pollock and Real Boys.
I'm definitely gonna check that out because I'd love to have a little bit more insight into what my son's going through. But I appreciate what you're doing. Like I said, as a mother of a boy, I appreciate.
You know, there's a good book just for the teens one. I remember one in particular that I thought was really good, and it was I don't remember the author, but it was Yes, My Teen Is Going Crazy or something like that. And it had an accompanying book for the teen. Is it Yes, My Parents Are Going Crazy or something like that? And I read it, and at the same time I gave it to my son because of that time being so confusing because of all the hormones, because of all the emotional changes. So those were really, that was a good book for that period of time.
I will definitely check all those out. And thank you again for everything that you're doing in the world, but also everything that you said on the podcast and kind of opening my eyes just a little bit. Where can our listeners find you?
The easiest place is my website. It's sonhoodcoaching.com. I've just actually tomorrow it will be out completely, but I've just published my first parent book. It's intentionally parenting your boys from birth to 8 years old. So it's like that first chunk of time, although there's things in there that would help any parent who is raising a boy for an eye opener and to get started.
Awesome. I'll have to check that out as well.
Thank you.
So we'll have another episode of Imperfect Momming for you all next week. And until we meet again, keep healing. Bye, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to Imperfect Momming. It's time for us to step up and realize that our power is not in trying to shape our children. Our power lies in shaping ourselves into the people we want our children to model themselves after. Don't just do it for your kids. Do it for yourself. When you become a more self-aware, compassionate, and confident person, you and everyone around you benefit. For more information about me and my work, visit alishalyons.com. That's alysia.com. See you next time.